Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Moneyweb.
All right, from roses and wine, let's switch to money and stress and money and love. Two things that can bring couples closer together or drive them apart. Financial habits can be deeply personal, often shaped by our upbringing, experiences, and even our personalities. But what happens when two people in a relationship have completely different approaches to money? And today, on the eve of Valentine's Day, we're tackling that tricky balance between love and finances. Kim Porchetta, she's been on the program before, is a certified financial planner, author, and coach. She has years of experience helping couples navigate money matters. I'm hoping she's going to share some practical strategies for achieving financial harmony. And goodness knows, at a time like this, we all want some financial harmony. So, Kim, a very good evening to you. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. Money often cited as one of the biggest stresses in a relationship. In your experience, why is that?
Definitely from what I see, it's because opposites attract. So we marry people that are opposite to us, and that's quite good for us in a relationship because we've got all these different opinions. But when it comes to money, what that does is it causes more conflict for us because I think we all know we don't like talking about money. And then when we do talk about it, we have different ways of looking at it.
Now, you make a very interesting point. You talk about something called the money mindset that is shaped by our upbringing and life experiences. And if I think back to my own life experiences, I was the son of a banker. My father was inherently cautious when it came to money and always taught me to be very nervous of credit. But those life experiences or the way in which we're brought up as children, how does this impact the way in which couples, once they've fled the nest, so to speak, handle their finances?
Well, Jeremy, it's what you're talking about. So you watched your father now and you saw the conservative. So your risk would probably be, so we go two ways. We either go with our parents and then we all, you know, risk averse, or we go the opposite because we watch what they're doing. Your partner would have had a totally different experience, and it goes into our subconscious and it forms our relationship with money. Our relationship with money is generally formed by the age of 8. And yet most clients that I'm speaking to don't even know they have a relationship with money. And yet it's all stemming from our formative years.
And if couples have a completely different approach, what you'll tell me is that can lead to strife, tension, conflict, and it can flare up very quickly.
If they don't talk about it. So for me, and maybe that's my message for today, is communicate with each other. So the reason it does that is because then you're pulling in two different directions. You actually take it personally about each other, and you think you intentionally are trying to do it differently to each other. But yet if you had these conversations and you realized where it was coming from, it changes everything, and then all of a sudden it wouldn't be causing that strife.
I'll buy the argument about better communication, but you'll also concede, Kim, that a conversation about money, particularly if you find yourself in a difficult position as a couple, can be awkward, painful, embarrassing, can't it?
Well, Jeremy, there's so much shame that goes with money. So especially when it's difficult. So you're already in a place where you're feeling vulnerable. So anything you're sensitive about. So my encouragement, and that would be my second thing, is my encouragement is not to be in that situation when you have the discussions. Have it in a neutral situation. Bring it up before you get into that. And then get a plan. And this is where people go wrong. They're having these conversations in isolation to really, when they should be saying, well, what is it we're trying to achieve? Why are we trying to achieve it? Then all of a sudden we can understand why we've got to do what we've got to do. Whereas when we're already fighting, it is downhill. We must stop the conversation.
So what then is the most important money conversation that a couple should have? And at what point do you start having that that discussion?
I wish people were having it before they were getting married. I mean, you know, when we might be living together, we might be going out, who pays for which meal. So it should come right at the beginning of our relationships. Yet in the beginning, we don't want to have it because we definitely don't want to upset anything. But, you know, if you're considering moving in with somebody, if you're considering getting married, before you do it, you should be having these conversations.
You also make an interesting point about spenders and savers often attract each other, but rightfully they can cause, or that can cause a major difficulties. So how can couples with completely different financial habits find common ground? I guess it's about having a tough conversation right up front. And maybe, and I'm answering the question here for you, maybe also being a little more compromising, finding a bit of latitude.
Well, that, but if you know where you're heading to. So I often find with people, the reason that they can't actually work things out is because they don't know why they're doing it. So if you know you're doing it because you want to get to X, then all of a sudden you're prepared to change your ways. So if you're a big spender and you understand that by not spending, it means you can have what you really want as a family, you're prepared to make the compromise. But when it's just somebody pointing out your faults, you become stubborn and you don't listen and then you don't make the changes.
So I find this interesting, the phrase you've just used, know where you're going to. Often that's very difficult, particularly in the early stages of a relationship. But having said that, couples have then got to set a joint financial goal, yet also maintain some level of financial independence. How do you go about setting those goals to satisfy both sides of the coin?
You have a discussion, and I mean, as a certified financial planner, that's what I like to do with my clients, where we actually sit and work out what we're trying to achieve. How are we each going to get there can be different. As you're saying, have an independent way of doing it, but know that you're going to contribute to get where you're going to. Because too many couples, what they do is they actually sabotage each other. So one will be this big investor and saver, and the other one's out there spending. And then all of a sudden you look around and you're bailing your partner out of debt because they've gone and got themselves into debt. So when you understand that you're each contributing, but you can get there in a different way, you're in charge of your own habits, not somebody else telling you how to do it.
Are you a spender or an investor, Kim? You don't have to answer that if you don't want to.
I like to do both. I certainly believe the reason I have money is to enable a really good life. And so I can make the sacrifice because there's so much that I want to achieve. I love to put in things what I want to do. But in order to do them, I know I'm having to be an investor.
Okay. Are you ready for the Valentine's Day question?
Okay. Ooh, I'm ready.
Here it comes. Okay. Sitting down, Kim. There's no prize here. Is financial compatibility more important than emotional compatibility in a relationship?
I know. I would go with emotional compatibility because I have seen couples that are completely different on the finances, but as long as they can emotionally connect with each other and their values are in alignment. So I would go that their values need to be in alignment. They can find financial compatibility.
Kim Porchetta, happy Valentine's Day for tomorrow. Appreciate your time tonight.
Heart Business on Heart 1027 with Jeremy Maggs on MoneyWeb.